Welcome to the Conspiracy Playtime Podcast, where we talk ideas that might get you and me canceled or raided by the FBI. In today's episode, we're going to be talking with Deplorable Janet about raising children in this fucked up world and how we can make them be a little bit better. Maybe we can have them be the new light in the world that we need. And I'm Jeremiah with my co-host Colby, and Deplorable Janet, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me back again. I always love spending time with you. And nice to meet you, my dear. You and I have not met before.
Likewise. I'm glad I could join in on this one. Mm-hmm. I've been MIA as I've been rearing my first child myself. So this is.
He's also been rearing his father. So oh, yeah. That's kind of when the show kind of took a Jeremiah break.
Yeah.
You haven't missed a beat. That was a fucking glorious intro, I think.
And, it just kind of, I just got on the train, man.
You did. It was exactly like all your other intros. Maybe a little better, a little sharper. You're fasting, that's why.
Maybe.
All right. Well, before we bring Janet in to just talk about her parenting experience, I kind of just want to set it up. Many of you know, especially if you watch the other show, Disinfobation. I don't know if there's a lot of crossover, if you're sick fucks out there. But I am having a kid. Not me personally. I will be chest feeding it since I live in Southern Oregon. But a lady who I had coitus with will be having my child. And I am getting ready for this to happen in the next month. It's due November 16th. It is October 21st as we record this. Things are a little intense right now. I don't know exactly when this episode will get out, but I hope to have it out by the time the kid's born. And I just want to talk about how crazy the world is and the reasons I never wanted kids in the beginning. And now they're the reasons that I'm grappling with.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Same thing. Yeah.
So Janet, why don't you start by talking about, like, before you had your kid, how you felt about it? Did you want to be a parent? Did you decide to do it on the fly?
No, it was an accident because I was on, unfortunately, birth control because, you know, I was stupid back then. And I had missed a pill and got pregnant. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to do this. Yeah, I don't. Mm-mm. Never wanted to be a parent. Did not have any desire to do so, but I knew that I was definitely not going to go down the road of abortion. And so, yeah, 24 years later, I'm glad I didn't do that.
Yeah. So 1999, is that?
Mm-hmm.
Were you so right before Y2K,
too? You were partying like Prince.
Now, at the time, I was working a lot, and so the place that I worked at was open ungodly late. I worked in a teaching facility, medical office, whatever, and so it was nothing to do 12, 14-hour shifts there, And I was like, oh, how is this going to work? Being pregnant and still trying to work all of that time. So, yeah, that was interesting time. And I ended up switching and not doing nursing at the time. And I went to do medical billing because I had done that before. I've always been in the medical field, so it was an easy switch to go to medical billing where I could sit down and have to be on my feet all the time and all of that stuff. So, yeah. And then the insurance didn't cover pregnancy. Ooh. So that was out-of-pocket expense. And, yeah.
Have you paid it off yet?
Oh, yeah. Finally.
That's good. So would you say you were in the mindset you are today about the way you see the
world? Did you have your glasses on yet, or did you not find those yet?
I did not have them on yet, but I have always had very different beliefs, I guess, than what my family raised me with, because they're more, I would say, on the liberal side of things. They're not liberals, but they're more like democratically minded and, you know, world peace and save the sea turtles from the plastic and kind of stuff. And the town that I grew up in too was very democratic. It's very political. It's very corrupt. And so I always knew that my beliefs were different than them. And so I had a lot of that, but I didn't have the knowledge that I do now, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So what was the, was there any particular reasons that you can think of that you didn't want to have kids before, outside of the just like, not for me? I mean, usually there's a couple of things that maybe like pop up. Was anything like that?
I would say a lot of it was because I had a string of very crappy relationships. And I was like, okay, well, nobody's very dependable. And I was still kind of, I guess you could say, self-centered at the time, because I was really into sports and, you know, traveling for tennis and stuff like that. And so that was kind of more my thing, and, you know, focused on work and focused on sports and stuff. And I was like, I'm not cut out to do this. And the reason why I say that is because my parents were not super affectionate. And so being raised in a household where they're like flipping each other off behind their backs and, you know, calling them names and stuff, I'm like, ooh, I don't think that's the way it's supposed to be. So, yeah, that's probably what put me in the I don't want to be a parent category. Yep. But now I don't regret it. Not one bit. No.
How soon did that switch?
After I found out I was pregnant, I didn't find out until I was like 4 months pregnant.
Oh, wow.
I had no idea. And my husband at the time was like, I'm pretty sure you're pregnant. And I'm like, no, I'm not. Why would I be pregnant? And he's like, nah, pretty sure you are, because, you know, like your stomach looks different. It looks really hard and whatever. And I was like, okay, I'll take a test. And I was. And so probably about a month after that, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm going to be a mom. And then, of course, like we were talking before the show about like how crazy your hormones get and the, you know, the mood swings and whatever. And it could literally be like a dog food commercial and you just like from the pits of hell, like you just can't stop bawling. And you're like, I don't even know why that was a sad thing or what made me cry. Like, I have no idea. And so, yeah, that was interesting.
Something that I find kind of fascinating is me and my fiance were just talking about how women, you have very clear, like, archways in your life that your body changes to change your entire mind and
mm-hmm.
your entire body. Mm-hmm. You've got, you know, at first with puberty, when you get your period, to then that's, you know, that's you stepping into womanhood. Mm-hmm. And then becoming a mother is a whole nother thing that happens. Mm-hmm. And then menopause happens. That'll affect your, affects you too.
I've hit all the above.
Whereas then on the flip side, you know, you've got us males who there's just like a ramp up of testosterone and then it slowly drops off. But mm-hmm. there's not really anything biologically inside of us that makes
that
these
you
shifts.
Have to prepare for. Yeah.
Right. Or even like, that you just trying to think through like becoming a father versus mm-hmm. becoming a mother. Like becoming a father is very external, and then you have to like internalize it that like, oh yes, I'm a father, I'm now responsible for this thing, and that does probably trigger some hormones inside of you, but nothing to the degree of like mm-hmm. you know, the entire term of my fiance's pregnancy, her body is preparing her to bear this child and to mm-hmm. raise it. Whereas me, I'm having to like think through these things like, oh yeah, we're about to have a kid and I'm about to be a dad.
But you're making you're making a chart in your mind. Like
yeah,
a little
exactly.
graph.
Yeah.
So why don't you take this opportunity, because we talked about where I'm at and then Janet's kid, and now you, who is 24 now, and mm-hmm. you, for people who haven't been listening to the show from the very beginning, you stepped away and tell everybody your news. It has come up, but not a lot.
Yeah. So 3 months ago, we had our son, and like, there's a very clear delineation now in my life of like the day before and the day after. It was quite a rocky birth for my fiance. It was, she had a lot of back labor. And she labored for like 36 hours or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was a roller coaster, and then ended up having to have an emergency C-section. And then there he was. And it was like I could stare at him all night long the first night. And irregardless of the fact that I had no sleep. Yeah, it was like the most amazing thing ever to see him and to hold him, and I love seeing him smile and start to laugh now, and it was interesting. Just over a year ago, before I decided that I was ready to have a kid, I was very much against it because I believed that having a child was guaranteeing suffering in the world. And, you know, if you have a child, then you are guaranteeing that their life is going to be suffering, because like you cannot live without suffering in some regard.
Mm-hmm.
And, I thought, well, that's kind of unfair to just like put that onto a soul of like, well, here you go. Welcome to hell. Otherwise known as Earth. And this is just kind of your lot in life. And yes, it sucks here. Obviously, like, you know, you can have a good life, but there's, you know, there is not a guarantee of a good life, but there is a guarantee that there's going to be hardships and it's going to be difficult. And also, you can't guarantee if they're going to be healthy as well. So I was very against it, especially with how crazy the world was getting. I was like, okay, I definitely don't want to bring a kid in this world. Are you kidding me? Like, people are nuts here. Like, I'm gonna bring a kid into the world when it seems like it's at like the height of the nuttiness.
Right.
But then I realized, it was actually listening to, I think it was Jordan Peterson's second book. And
he liked it before he was cool.
Yeah.
Dexter, god damn it.
He had kind of spoken about child rearing and just raising children and some other things too. It kind of started to percolate in my mind of like, raising a kid, you kind of are able to try to bring the light into the world and to like raise the next generation. And if I look around at the people who are raising kids who are like complete idiots, then, you know, I don't want those kids to be in charge of the world because they probably aren't going to do as good of a job.
Right.
Whereas somebody who's You know, I think if you're somebody who realizes the intense responsibility of raising a kid, you're going to do a better job than somebody who's like, oh yeah, this, you know, I've got a kid and I get a tax write-off because of it. Or, you know, it's just not, it seems like there are a lot of parents out there who are not as aware of like the weight of raising a child. And I think that's what also intimidated me so much to not have a kid is like, are you kidding me? You're responsible for this child and to make them be a good human being. Like that's, if that isn't a responsibility, I don't know what is. Like everything else can seem like a cakewalk compared to that. You know, you screw up at your job, no big deal, but you screw up on a child, that has consequences for an entire lifetime.
And you will screw up, though.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? It's like you're talking about guaranteed suffering. If there's any parent out there who hasn't fucked up, I'd like to meet them.
Yeah, it's impossible.
But Jana, did you ever fuck up?
More times than I can count, yes. And the sad thing is, you know, parenting doesn't come with the book, right? You could read literally all the books that are published out there, but you have to go through it to learn, unfortunately, and make those decisions where, and one of the things that was like in my household, because I divorced my husband like very shortly after, you know, my daughter was two when our divorce was final. And one of the things that people would get on me for all the time was, you can't be so open with your daughter. You should not be telling them X, Y, and Z. You shouldn't, you know, like you shouldn't have conversations about, you know, kids having sexual intercourse or whatever. She's too young to hear stuff like that, blah, blah, blah. And I'm glad I didn't listen. Those are things that people faulted me for all the time, but I taught her at a very early stage that there's always consequences to your actions. So regardless if it was about, you know, teen sex or, you know, whatever the case may be, we always had those honest, open discussions. And so throughout life, I'm lucky enough to say that she shares everything with me, even sometimes if it's TMI and things that I don't want to know. I'm glad that she feels safe enough to share, if that makes
sense.
That's
huge. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, you know, but did I screw up a lot? Probably. Like, should I have instilled her with like faith and stuff like that? Yes, I probably should have done that a little bit better. So that is a big regret, but we're working on that right now.
So, she's not on your level religiously?
No. Mm-mm. Okay. No, and she'll call me and she'll tell me whatever's going on. And she's like, can you pray for me? And I'm like, well, we can do it together. Yes, of course, I'll pray for you because I pray for you every night. But let's do this together because you need to get in the habit of relying on something outside of selfishness. You know what I mean?
Yeah, both of you know I'm not a man of faith in the traditional sense, but the woman I'm having a kid with, she is starting to go to church. Mm-hmm. She's very like Eastern type shit, like
New Age.
New Age is a way to say it, yeah.
Right.
But she's also tapped into like where you're at, and she has issues with religion that I have, but you have that too.
And there's a big difference between actual belief and churchiosity, is what we like to call it, because there's so much like fallible religious sects and teachings and behaviors and stuff like that. And biblically speaking, church is not in a building. Church is fellowshipping with other people.
Yeah.
And so humankind as the one that was like, oh no, if you don't go to this building every Sunday
and pay your dues,
then you're a non-believer. Yes. And I have a very different belief system on that, because people are always talking about tithing and, you know, whatever, and the churches that we've been to that have been a nightmare lately. It's like they want you to do like a certain percentage, like 11% of your income or 10% or whatever it is. And my thing is, it's not about that, because they didn't have money in the biblical sense back then. And so it was goods, services, whatever. And so if you're giving your time to other people, like Colby, you know, I do a lot of like therapy work with people, whatever. I don't charge for that. It's just my time. And that's what I give to other people, or, you know, I make goods or whatever, and I send stuff to people. That's my tithing.
As it should be.
Yeah.
Because once you put a middleman between you and God, all sorts of shit can happen.
Mm-hmm. Which we've seen firsthand here a lot lately.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I kind of have a way I'd like to steer the conversation, because you mentioned openness, mm-hmm. and people ridiculing you for that. Mm-hmm. Like, I was just talking to my baby mama the other day, or it was actually today, about the three things that I see start being pushed, especially on little boys, mm-hmm. is when you're too young to even know what's what, you see cowboy and Indian shit, mm-hmm. space shit, and mm-hmm. dinosaur shit.
Right.
And it's like right away they're starting to program mm-hmm. you into like the right. way of the scientific and the historical documents that we all abide by. Mm-hmm. And I just said to her, like, what do I do when, like, they ask about the moon? Like, do I tell them what I think, or do I tell them what the world thinks? Because I don't have an inclination to tell them their version of the story. But
do you tell right. them everything?
Well,
or like different sides, and say you decide.
Kind of the conclusion I came to was, yeah, you would do that, but I would say I wouldn't do it until the kid asked.
Well, and I have a very different take on that, because that's to me like one of the downfalls in our society, is that parents take a step back from teaching their kids morals, values, and belief systems, teaching them truth above all things, right? And so they take a step back, we'll let the school system educate them. So whoever that teacher is in school is going to instill their belief system on the children. And that's how kids have become so indoctrinated, is because parents got so lazy that they did not have earnest conversations with you. So that's my take. And I
so is your issue with the public school system itself, or relying on it more?
Well, yeah, letting somebody outside of your household parent and shape and mold that child. That is your literal sole job in life.
And luckily, she and I are on the same page about that, and I assume. Mm-hmm.
I mean, my plan is homeschool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. maybe depending on, I feel like either there are some like, gosh, what's the name of that school? This type of school. Waldorf schools. But I feel like those are starting to also,
they take state money, and so they have to instill the
state curriculum. Right.
I think also too, like, they are being run by very
liberal minded.
Yeah. And so that's kind of getting corrupted. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, I mean, to me, it seems like homeschool is the biggest thing. What happened with me growing up, going to public school, something that I think was impactful was my mom had a huge bookshelf, kind of like this right here. Mm-hmm. And it like spread the gamut. It was a lot of spiritual books, stuff like that, but like it was all mm-hmm. over the place. And once I started reading, you know, beyond just like kids' books, I started picking up these random books and reading them, and it wouldn't, and then I would ask her about it and like have conversations about it. And I did take one year where I was kind of homeschooled, but it was more just like, it was, I kind of got to do whatever I wanted to at that point. And we were helping my grandpa. And so it was kind of almost like the school of hard knocks for one year in fifth grade. And that kind of like broke. I feel like that one year like made me not really give a shit about school anymore after that. Cause it was like, well, none of this really matters. And you know, it's like, oh, well, I didn't go to school and I survived, and like grades didn't matter for a year. So they must not be that big of a deal. And then also too, just having the power of the internet and being able to like search things that
he's young.
Yeah. So, right. So I grew up with the computer.
I grew up without the internet.
I barely did, but my town was behind the rest of the world. So,
but I mean, it's, it, I can see how it's easy to depend or rely on the school system because especially if you are, both parents are slaving away 40 plus hours a week, some of them 50 plus hours a week in order to afford their home, groceries, the kid. And then not to mention, it's like maybe some insecurities in your own knowledge, like, oh, well, I can't teach this kid because I don't know anything. I barely got the job I got. I barely graduated, you know. So I think that can be a difficult thing for parents to feel like, well, I'm not, you know, qualified. But then, you know, it's like, well, do you really need to be qualified to teach a child how to interact in this world?
Right. Yeah. And there's a lot of homeschooling stuff that you can get as far as program wise and whatever, where you decide as a parent what you're going to teach your kids. And so, you know, if you're in science class or, you know, whatever the case is, or like biology or something, you go to the zoo. And so you learn about, you know, whatever at the zoo, or, you know, implementing different ways as a parent if you're teaching your child and trying to give them an education. And something that I always did when my daughter was junior high, I guess, like the right on the verge of junior high, and they did that whole Common Core whatever, and so she would come home and she'd be like, can you help me with my math? And I'm like, okay, well, we're gonna do the problem this way, and then I'm gonna show you the correct way to do math, the easy way to do math that doesn't involve weird graphs and stuff that had nothing to do with the problem. I'm like, this is extra busy work. And so I would show her different ways, or, you know, she would have like a history assignment or something, and it would, it's stupid stuff. Like it would be, let's learn about Michael Jackson. And that's in her history book. And I'm like, okay, so let's look up, like, where's the Great Wall? What's the Berlin Wall? What was the significance of it or something? We would always have like separate discussions that would teach her about other things that were not in her book.
Some side quests.
Yes.
Michael Jackson was in her history book?
Yes. So influential public figure. And I'm just like, why is this in your book?
You're going to get that outside of school. Everybody knows who Michael Jackson is.
Yeah. And so, it was just like the books were crap. And, you know, like they would have like rental. You had to rent textbooks. Okay. And so you couldn't bring your textbook home unless you had homework in it because it was a rental, and they might not give it back and whatever. And so they'd give them like these stupid paperback workbooks or something to come home to do your work in, or whatever. But then if you didn't bring your book home because the teacher didn't allow you to bring your book home, how are you going to do your homework? So, yeah.
Something else that you sparked memory in my mind of American history class that I took, or U.S. history, whatever it's called. And I just remember we had to like fly through the book, right? And like, just when you think like, oh, this sounds interesting, like, boom, we're on to the next thing. And so you don't ever school, like most schools don't allow the child to find something that piques their interest to then go deep on it, which is what we should be doing as humans.
And that's the purpose, right?
Just skim over everything.
Skim it and memorize only what they want you to memorize to regurgitate for a test.
Yeah, retain so it long enough for the Friday quiz. Yeah.
And so that's the way the school system is based, because what does that do? It takes out the critical thinking and the creativity from learning and puts you directly into that 5-minute mindset where kids only have an attention span for 5 minutes.
And there wasn't even TikTok when public school books were starting.
Right. And oh, let me tell you, teaching is super duper fun now that there's internet and everybody has a cell phone. That was a huge thing in class when I was teaching college, is they're so used to texting and text speak. When they would write papers, they would write in text speak. I went through so many red pens. I'm like, what the hell? I would circle it and be like, what does this even mean?
WTF.
Yeah. And I'm like, you know, I'm like, redo this in people language that somebody that's not texting you on a phone is going to understand. And it was like,
and this is college.
This is college. And this is the way they're getting through class. They didn't know how to do basic math problems, you know, like 1 + 4 = what? They couldn't do simple stuff. And this was in a professional capacity. They're going for, you know, either a nursing license or they're going for medical assisting license, and you don't have basic skills.
Some of the people that go through those programs that you just like is scary.
Yes.
Because it's like, yeah, they can memorize, boom. But like, yeah, the critical thinking part is like so gone. And to think that those are the people that are
taking care of everyone.
Yeah, it's like, that's scary.
That's why for me, like, it was so important for me to teach things that were not in the textbook, but things that you're going to run into in everyday life. And this is the scenario. What would you do and why? What are the outcomes? What can you see happening because of your actions? And so every class that I taught, I would make them use critical thinking skills, because they don't teach that anymore. They don't want you to have that going through the programs that they have put into place in schools now, because if they can take out the critical thought process, it's easier to make drones.
So do you think there was a time where they taught critical thinking?
Yes. I can say when I grew up, even though, you know, when I grew up, I went to Catholic school. Poor me at the time. I was taught by nuns, but it would be, you know, think about what you're doing. There's consequences for your actions. Like if you do this, X, Y, and Z, then you're going to get the ruler over your knuckles. You know, learn what you're supposed to do. Learn how you're supposed to be a good person. Learn how you're supposed to treat other people. What happens if you don't? You know, so I can say I grew up that way, definitely. But there again, my parents did not sit me down and have like conversations with me about anything. And so I had to learn the hard way. Did I get my knuckles bloodied more than once? Because I was like, I didn't learn how to speak to people because I grew up in a household where they're flipping each other off. You know what I mean? So I had to learn that, unfortunately, through school and through the nuns, how to basically interact with other people. So that's why I didn't want to leave that for the school for my child. That was my job.
Yeah. And I used to have, I thought I was kind of walking the line, and I was on the fence about it. But before I committed to having a kid, I always told myself if I ever had a kid, I would send them to public school, and then, like, at the end of the day,
unbrainwash them.
Yeah, the right. Unschooling bullshit they talk about. But because I thought the social interaction was what was school was good for, like learning how to interact in the world. But as I've gotten older, and I've changed.
You don't want to interact with the world now.
No, I don't want my kid to have to learn that gender is on a spectrum. And
well, and also right. too, nowadays the kids don't, and like they're interacting through their phone.
Yeah,
right.
If they're all together, they're all on their phone.
Right.
There is no actual, and if anything, I think there is a problem with having all of the kids the same age together.
Mm-hmm.
Something that was impactful for me was my dad used to always bring me around and make me have conversations with people who are adults.
Right.
As a young child.
Same with my daughter.
Mm-hmm. And so that was really impactful because, like, they would have a conversation with me and treat me, you know, some of them would treat me more like as a child than others, but to be able to have conversations with people who are not your age
mm-hmm.
and to have to, you know, you're then reaching up versus right. being on the same level playing field. Not to mention, most of those kids in your same age are going to be, you know, pulling you down versus mm-hmm. bringing you up. And I think that that's, you know, back when it was like way back when it was the schoolyard,
12 in the same class,
right? All in
Little House on the Prairie.
One house, yeah,
right.
That I think would be way better for that social interaction part than sticking everybody together the same age.
And I can tell you, there was one point in time where I was like, okay, I don't have anybody to like watch her. I'm working these horrible hours. I'm like, let's go check out like daycares or whatever, so she can get some kind of, you know, schooling or whatever when I'm at work. And we went and interviewed at this place, and I mean, she could like go to the bathroom at like 6 months old and stuff. She was very independent. And these people were like, well, you have to bring snacks where she can eat it with her fingers. And I'm like, she knows how to use silverware. And this is like, she had her little case of silverware she would take with her. And it was like, well, the other kids don't know how to feed themselves. And so we're not going to allow her to do that. And I'm like, this is the wrong place. Then.
She might teach them bad habits.
Right. She might start stabbing kids. No, it was just like, it was like, there's such a wide range. Like some kids, like they know how to, you know, they're potty trained by the time they're supposed to go to daycare or whatever. And then there's other kids that are older that still are not potty trained, you know? And so that runs the gamut again on what parents are teaching their children at home. And
if they are at
and
all.
And how they're right. And how they're molded and shaped, because there are a lot of people out there. And I can say this from working in the medical community my whole entire life, that there are so many people that don't parent their children because they were never parented. So no one ever showed them like how to be a parent or what to do. And so you get into that situation where the parent wants to be their child's best friend. So it's just like a drinking buddy or a pot smoking buddy or whatever, instead of that parent child relationship. So there's a lot of that. There's just a lack of common sense or the ability to separate your child from you as an adult. So, because you have to have that where I wouldn't say, you know, they don't have to fear you, but they kind of do, because they always need to know that you're the adult and you're in charge and they're under your roof and what you say goes. Because if you don't put a kibosh on that early enough, the kid will take that and run with it and have the worst rebellious behavior like ever.
Are you worried that's gonna happen to you?
No, because I
you have a boy. Yeah, I was gonna say,
and I
you
party
have a boy. Yeah,
And yeah, I think you're definitely right that making sure that you have that dichotomy of like, we can have a conversation,
right?
But at the end of the day, my house, my rules. You are my child,
right?
But it can be an interesting toe, you know, line to toe, because it's like, well, you know, how are you able to have all these open conversations? And, you know, is it just having that, making sure that you are stern when needed versus like, I mean, it's kind of a, there's this author, Robert Greene. He wrote a bunch of different books around psychology and things like that. And he talks about it for one of the books is 33 Rules of War or something like that.
How many?
33. And yeah, I know exactly.
Yes. That's not sus at all.
All right. Oh yes. There's his background is very sus, but you can still get a lot out of the books. Cause he also references The Art of War, which is Sun Tzu, which is quite the questionable who wrote this book. In that he talks about how you've got to be likable, but then every now and then you've got to show your teeth, right?
Right.
Every now and then you have to show your teeth. Mm-hmm. Otherwise they forget.
Right.
And then they don't have respect for you. Mm-hmm. And so that I think is going to probably be the hardest part, is having that, like, you know, you almost have to, like, right now, like, while the child is young, be thinking about, like, okay, what are my hard lines in the sand? And, like, make sure you have a conversation with yourself that's, like, once this, you know, this stops here, that way you're not having to have a debate with yourself later in the exact moment that it's going out. Like, that's going to be a harder conversation to have, because you're... then maybe you're going to come back and be like, oh crap, I didn't, you know, I should have put my foot down, but I didn't. And now I have to backpedal. And is that going to make me look like I don't know what I'm talking about, cause I'm backpedaling. Mm-hmm. How would you handle something like that?
I will say that it was a very different situation for me. Cause like I said, we got divorced when my daughter was two. And so I got to be the good cop and the bad cop. Right? I was both at all times. And so you do have to have those, you know, what's acceptable, what's allowable in your house. And you have to make sure they know, like, what rules are in place in your house when they get older. Of course, yours too small to worry about that right now. But, like, what are the rules about, you know, like, when you're child gets a little bit older, like about touching things that don't belong to them, or breaking things on purpose, or chewing the corners off of the furniture because they're teething, or you know, so you have to have that balance. You have to find that balance of, yes, I'm going to show you my stern side when I need to, but also this is my fun side, and we can have fun together and build that, like, trust relationship. And that's very important early on, to know that they're safe and that they can trust you. But at the same time, if you mess up, you're going to know that you messed up. And it's okay as a parent, when your kids get older, to tell them, you know, I didn't handle that situation the right way. This is what I should have done, and I didn't.
This is why you're all fucked up, and I take somewhat of credit for that.
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things where, like, we didn't watch a lot of TV when I worked a lot, but when I wasn't, like, we would sit down and we would do, like, creative things together, like craft projects, or we would make, you know, music with, like, pots and pans, or, you know, do little projects or something, build, you know, like a cabin out of sticks or something like that, just to make sure that, you know, not only are they still being creative, but you can show them your fun side as well. So it is definitely a balance. But you, when you have rules and lines, they need to know that there's consequences if they cross those.
One area that I'm hoping can be kind of a space to hold both the fun side and the rules, mm-hmm. is teaching them about how to use guns and how to mm-hmm. shoot guns and how to safely right. use them. And also, if we're not at the range, you don't fucking touch it.
Right. And, exactly.
I think that that's a space that certainly people don't teach anymore like they used to. Some mm-hmm. some people do, obviously, but
unless you live in the South.
Right. So I think that's an area where it's like it was good when hunter safety was taught in schools for right. kids, because right. it's a very real thing. Like, this is not mm-hmm. something that you can dick around with.
Right.
This is life or death if you screw it up. And you know, it's kind of the same thing of like, most people don't teach their kids about death or mm-hmm. anything like that. And it's like, this is like a very like sheltered thing. And like, most of the time it's closed casket. And like, we don't talk about what happens after you die. Mm-hmm. But it seems like those things that are most kind of shunned or not talked about are kind of the areas that should have a light shine.
That should
in
be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? When I was growing up, I grew up in the era where the kids who drove to school
had gun shotguns in their gun rack. Yeah, I did
yep,
too.
Had shotguns in their truck in the back window. Nobody bothered them. There was never anybody shooting up schools. None of that stuff. That was not a thing ever.
Yeah.
So I also grew up in an era with a rotary phone, right. if that tells you anything.
We had a kid bring a gun into school and have it in his locker and found out later. And it was after Columbine when I graduated high school. I think Columbine mm-hmm. happened when I was right in the end of junior high, maybe starting high school. But mm-hmm. yeah, I saw that change take place. I was right. also a senior when 9/11 happened. And just all these things that changed the world, and like wanting your kids to go out into it and knowing that they'll be safe. I mean, that's something that we could talk about that's changed probably since you even raised your kid mm-hmm. with the world we're going to put our kids into. And I will say this, because I wanted to interject when you were talking about deciding to have a kid when you see the flock raising kids and they're the only people raising the kids. I actually decided mm-hmm. I wanted to have kids during COVID. Which I tell people that, and they're like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Dude, I think there's a COVID baby boom right now.
Yeah. Right. And
well, it's because everybody was locked down at home and
well, and I think
time
though,
to practice your skills.
Drunk and cooking.
I think though, I don't know. I mean, obviously the charts will, you know, like the population charts will read it out, but it seems like there's a little bit of a lag. So it's like, did people have time to be introspective or to decide? Because, you know, we've grown up now in a world where birth control is so prevalent in the United States
mm-hmm. right.
that most people have chosen to go on birth control. And also, you know, the women have been taught, like, go after your career, right or wrong. Mm-hmm. And
feminism.
Right, exactly. Like, mm-hmm. You need to focus on your career first. Mm-hmm. And so it's like... it seems like there's been a little bit of a delay, right, Camille, because like we're in 2023, right? So it's like, in theory, you know, it's not like that, like, immediate post-war boom
mm-hmm.
where it's like as soon as they got home. So right. it's kind of an interesting thing of like, okay, well, maybe people having kids now had a little bit more introspective in it compared to before. I don't know. Maybe not. Anyways, you had a thought.
Oh, I worry about people that make drastic decisions. And it was, for me, it was like, I was lonely. I wanted a family. And I saw mm-hmm. a bunch of fucking retards acting a damn fool. And mm-hmm. it was like, if I don't care if humanity survives at the end of the day. But if it's going to, we need more. I mean, as we've been talking here, Idiocracy has come up in my mind multiple times. Mm-hmm. Like when you're right. talking about the school with the text speak, I thought of that scene in Idiocracy where the doctor's like, so it says on your chart, your shit's all fucked up and you talk like a fag. Those are the kids that were tech speaking.
Exactly. And that is what our society is producing. And these are the people that are supposed to run the world in the future. And these are people who grew up solely with digital devices as babysitters, right? And then indoctrination in school. And then they have to have safe places in the workspace, or they have to have day off because they're mental health issues, or, you know, whatever. Things have transformed so much, and society has gotten so absurdly weak as a whole that it's frightening to think that these are the future leaders, these are the future teachers. What in the world are you going to be teaching?
Well, we're already seeing that kids now. Like with the, of course it's cherry picked, but it's very prevalent. Like the libs of TikTok stuff, they show these teachers that go out in their car and have a mental breakdown during their break, and they, what have my students misgendered me? Or whatever the fuck.
I would say, okay, I taught at an inner city college in the, this is like one of the top five murder capitals, right? And so there were multiple occasions where my students were like, meet me outside because I'm gonna stab you, or, you know, whatever. And I'm like, okay, you think you can accomplish it? Okay, I'll meet you outside. Like, I worked with prisoners on the prison unit and stuff that, like, you literally don't bother me. But people nowadays are so, like, triggered by everything, whether it's the pronouns or somebody spoke to you the wrong way or whatever it is. We're so soft now that everything is so upsetting. That's because we have built into society the conditioning that it's okay to be who you are. Okay, that's very satanic. That goes against literally everything that you're taught in the Bible to be strong and whatever. Like, we have weakened everybody to the point where, you know, like it started out with everybody gets a participation trophy. You know, you're special too. You're, even though you're a loser, you're still special too, right? You're going to get a trophy. And then it's, college kids, you don't have to take your exams because I know, you know, all the election was so upsetting for so many people that everybody needs a safe space and a, you know, and everybody's having a mental health crisis because Trump got in office. So we're canceling the exams. Nobody has to take a final. What? So you're building these people so they feel the sense of entitlement that they should always come first over everything else. And so then you put them in the workforce. And then what does that do in the workforce? Creates problems for employers because your employees need mental health days now, or you need, you know, a room with pacifiers and papoose swings or something, because
or they will
and that's not a joke, by the way.
Oh, I believe it. But I think I was also hearing that a lot of, like, the employees will just not do their job, and it's okay because the employer is so fucked anyways to find somebody who will fill that seat to take care of the one customer that comes in a day. So they just have to roll over and be okay with the person not doing their job or not doing a good job.
Because they'll sue you.
Well, that too. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So it's like, you, it's really, and now, I mean, I could go off on like a whole side tangent, but now you've got this indoctrination of all business owners are bad. And so
capitalism.
Yeah, exactly. So the boss is evil. So fuck the boss.
We deserve a share of this company because we've worked here for 3 months.
Right. Yeah. We didn't sacrifice anything. and we didn't go into massive debt and all that stuff.
Right.
And so that, yeah, I mean, and that also too is another thing that, like entrepreneurship versus the indoctrination of go get a job and clock in and clock out. Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting that the school system trains everybody to be an employee.
Oh, it's a but, factory training well, center.
Yeah, but school. Then but right. then they're teaching them how shitty the employer is.
Right.
Yeah. Once you get into college, they're teaching that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and a lot of times in high school, because they have DECA programs and whatever, different programs at school where you get early release to go work and stuff like that. And so they start to get that definite indoctrination in high school, you know, about you have to be an employee, but this business sucks and they're literally out to screw you. That's why, in my opinion, a trade school is so much better than a four-year university, because you can learn a trade that you can literally use at home to start your own business. You go to school for auto mechanics, start a garage out of your house. You know what I'm saying? Or, you know, teaching somebody to be a pipe fitter or whatever. You do whatever you need to do in a creative way to make your own money. You don't have to go work for big business. But that's what they do, though. That's what they gear the education system toward now, is that this is what's expected of you. You're just going to have to accept that this is your life, and you're going to have to go to work, and you're going to have to punch a clock, and you're going to have to do everything the government tells you, everything your employer tells you, and you can't think outside the box, like, ever.
In high school, I think I was lucky enough where I graduated. I like graduated like right at the end when everything seemed to be like getting shoved in. Mm-hmm. Because I had a entrepreneurship class that was an elective.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah, it wasn't forced on everybody, but I took it and it was extremely enlightening. But it did seem like either the budget wasn't there for it, or like mm-hmm. there was a lot of stuff that we were supposed to do, but that we didn't get to do. You know, there was supposed to be like this trade fair that we were supposed to go to, where all the other schools that are taking this type of class, we would like compete. Mm-hmm. That was really eye opening and definitely, you know, having that the teacher there was so much more just open and aware of like the world, right? Comparatively to the other teachers. And then also too, my auto shop teacher, because luckily I got to take a mechanics class and a welding class. Mm-hmm. He was also very open to the world and was pushing people to go to, you know, a trade school, or, you know, mm-hmm. don't go get in debt at a college to go then go work at Starbucks. That's what's going to happen.
Right. 100%. And the funny thing is that a lot of schools now are gearing their students toward gender studies or psychology. Where in the workforce are you going to use $160,000 or more degree in gender studies?
You got to go right back into the universities. That's the only place to have those jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, or even psychology. Okay, well, then you still have to do further education to get a high enough license and high enough degree to make any money. Do you want to make $30,000 a year? You know, I mean, they gear them toward these jobs where they're going to fail. There's a huge failure rate because they don't know, you know, that the pay is so shitty that they could literally go to Starbucks and make more money working at Starbucks.
Especially now, right? Mm-hmm. You can go make a shitload of money at fast food restaurants compared
right.
to...
Yeah.
And you're fighting high schoolers for that job.
Well, and here they just opened like one of those, you know, drive-through automated car washes or whatever. And the pay at this car wash, and I know this sounds like horrible money, but I'm going to tell you why it's laughable. So it's $10 to $18 an hour plus commission, whereas an entering nurse in the workforce down here makes the same amount of money as an entry level as what you could be at working at the car wash.
And they don't get commission.
No.
Well, something that I think is happening too is a lot of people, a lot of younger kids who are entering the workforce see like, oh, well, I can go make 15, 18 bucks an hour at McDonald's. I'm going to go work there instead. Mm-hmm. But they don't realize that there are jobs where, yeah, the entry level position mm-hmm. is that. But then if you stay with it long enough, you will be able to make more money with it. And you mm-hmm. like, you'll be able to make jumps, and there'll be other things that can, you know, that will come out of that mm-hmm. versus just going in and like the ceiling is going to be so much shorter at right. anything else. So it's
right.
I think it's no kind of scary. Movement. Yeah. And it's kind of scary that this minimum wage movement has taken off so much, because it's like, you're not supposed to stay there. Like, if you are staying at that minimum wage, you're a fucking idiot, and you should make that much money because you don't realize that you need to become better and be more valuable to the
exactly.
company.
Exactly. But that's built into the system too, because that's teaching them that they don't have to do anything different. They can literally work fast food for the rest of their life, making minimum wage, and it's okay.
Yeah, drives me crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, this guy right here, Jeremiah, when he walked into the place where I still work, he was 22 years old, and he had a resume that like had more jobs than me and the owner of the company. And we looked at it and we're like, is this forged? But he'd like painted airplanes and made little syringe glass case thingies. Mm-hmm. And fuck, your dad
pills.
11 jobs when you're in your dad or
yeah.
you,
every year dad, every year I'd get bored because you know if they're not gonna promote me, then fuck, I'm gone,
right?
Like, and usually though I would get a raise within like 30 days 90 mm-hmm. days, because it's so easy now right. to stand mm-hmm. out, because nobody is pushing themselves. So
100%
you just gotta yep. jog, right? You don't have to run yep. you just jog, and you just fly past people who have been there for a year, and they're like, oh well, you're making us look bad. And it's like, no, you're just lazy.
You're making
lazy,
you look
yeah.
bad.
And yeah. it is the lazy thing. We talk about that all the time, because anytime you go somewhere, you have people like at the grocery store or whatever, especially like if you go through a self-checkout or something, and you know they have like a clerk that's supposed to help you if there's a problem.
Always
but
checks my
ID because
I have beer. That's their
job. Yeah, me too. But they're literally texting on their phone, and it's like you have to wait because they're more concerned about what's going on their phone than they are about doing their job. So customer service has gone out the window because they don't have to wait on you. They don't have to serve you. They don't have to like anything to do with anybody except themselves.
Did you guys see the video where the chick was working in a drive-thru and she started shooting at the people?
Yeah. I saw something about that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was over ketchup or something, the dispute.
Yeah.
She ended up, they yelled and drove off, and she ended up fucking pulling a gun on him.
And yeah, and why, what about that situation upset her so badly that she felt the need to do that?
Must have been pretty horrible.
I mean, did somebody like dunk you in a vat of ketchup when you were little? Or like what happened? I don't know. But those are, you know, like all the mental health stuff now has also been ingrained into like the school system and stuff, because
you need a cry closet.
If you are bored, okay, obviously kids get bored because they have a literal short attention span. And so kids get bored, or they're not challenged, or things are too easy, or whatever. Everybody's got ADHD. You need to go have your kids tested because they can't pay attention in class. And so it's like put your kids on meds at a super early age, or oh, they're struggling with puberty, so they're really depressed, you should put them on meds. And parents are so stupid, they listen. And it's like, everybody's medicated. And everybody's so, like, emotionally dumbed down, numb, whatever. It's easier to control a herd of sleeping cattle than it is cattle that are awake.
Yeah. And so what do we do? Like, I'm at the point where I wonder about raising someone to be awake to the bullshit mm-hmm. going on in the world. And like, mm-hmm. I'm starting to think that a lot of this doom and gloom shit that all of us conspiracy theorists have been obsessing about for the last couple decades is a psyop also. And so like, I don't know how my beliefs about the way the world is stand as to like what I thought when I was 20 and didn't want to have kids, because now I'm just kind of thinking isolation's a good thing. Up to a point. Like, I used to mm-hmm. think to isolate your kids from the world was bad mm-hmm. and too many people did it. Mm-hmm. But now I'm thinking maybe there's like a balance mm-hmm. where you do isolate them from it, but teach them about it also. Mm-hmm. They are going to have to get out in it. And I'm not somebody who's going to keep my kid isolated from like going out into the world or having friends. And mm-hmm. I don't know. It's stuff I'm struggling with is, do you really want your kid to be that awake? Because I know people who have kids and they think the moon landing was fake and they think that the Illuminati control Hollywood.
And is that, does that get to the point where it's almost like if they're too awake, or like there's maybe the spectrum there where it's like you start waking up and then you're like, well, what the fuck is the point of all this shit? And then you get to the other side and then you realize that like, oh, well, I'm just, you know, I just need to enlighten myself here on this journey and try to spread as much light as I can. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, we're all going to, you know, we're going to get freaking reborn mm-hmm. how many other times or whatever you want to believe there. But like, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, none of this actually matters. Like, we're all just right. here to play
yeah,
a game.
But nihilism and black-pilled is part of the equation of being awake, but it's not like the end all, I don't think.
No, but it's a step, right?
It is.
And it's a step that you can get stuck there.
Mm-hmm. Well, kind of too, like you need a balance on what kind of things that you tell them or whatever. Because if they do at some point go to school and they're like, well, my dad says, exactly. you know, the whatever and blah, 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 then like you're the crazy person and then they're going to get made fun of. So to me, like with my kids, like the most important thing to teach them is morals, values, telling the truth, what consequences come from stuff, how to be creative, and how to be nice to other people, you know, and defend yourself when you need to, in the way that you need to.
And would you also say like critical thinking is an important thing to instill?
100%.
Because that's where I'm like, but where when you're teaching them to be critical, like I necessarily have made up my mind about certain things, but I don't want mm-hmm. them to think that just because I have. So I'd like,
and you want them to come to the conclusion.
Yeah, don't call me on my bullshit just as much as you do what you learn about NASA. But
right,
like I don't know. I think that it's going to be easier than I'm stressing, because it's the one thing I'm always thinking about is like, you keep saying the word truth, Janet, mm-hmm. and like the truth about certain things is pretty unclear.
Well,
but I think morals is a truth you also keep talking about too. So.
Yeah, 100%. And by truth, I mean, you need to learn to tell the truth. And that's, you know, because kids are very manipulative, right? At a younger age, they're very manipulative. It gets worse when they're teenagers, especially if you have a girl. And it's like, there's only me and you in this house, and you're telling me that you didn't do this. But it definitely wasn't mom, so who else could it have been? You know, it's like, I didn't do it. It wasn't me. It was someone else. And I'm like, no, that's what we call a lie. And so, like, teaching them, you know, that the truth sometimes is hard. Sometimes it's going to come with consequences, but it's better than lying. And so, you know, always be honest, always be truthful. And that's why I said, like, my daughter gives me a lot of TMI because she's very, like, she's not going to lie about something and she'd tell me stuff. And I'm like, okay, like, thank you for sharing that. That was a little bit too much information, but thank you for sharing. You know, at least you were truthful with me. And so, you know, things like that, when I say truth is really about telling the truth about your behavior and, you know, what if you did something, if you didn't do something, and don't lie to get out of something. If you did it, own up to it.
I would imagine also teaching by example, which may be, I don't know if I don't want to say necessarily more difficult or less difficult, but different as a single parent versus when there's two of you and like, okay, well, Dad, you said that Mom didn't look fat in that dress, but
yes. So, and there is definitely playing up sides. There will be, because that's, like I said, the manipulation that they go through where they're trying to manipulate sides, or Dad said I could do this, even though Mom said no. And then you fibbed about it and said, Mom said yes too. So those kind of situations are definitely going to come up, and you have to make sure that they know that that is not acceptable behavior. You're not going to pit us against each other because we're on a united front. And so it's really important for parents to be on the same page about how they're going to raise their kid, what they're going to do, the parenting styles. If your parenting styles are different, you have to learn to merge those. If you have stepkids or whatever in the picture, you have to learn those roles and who's acceptable and what roles and how you're going to put those styles together. And we definitely went through that when I got married to my second husband, because his parenting style is very different than mine. I'm a very matter-of-fact kind of person, and I don't sugarcoat things. I don't do it for other people. I sure don't do it for my kids, you know. And if I tell you to do something and you repeatedly refuse to do it, there's going to be an issue. And I'm not going to, like, this is the thing that I use all the time. When we first got together, merged our families together, he would tell his son to brush his teeth. He wouldn't do it. And he would be laying, like, in the recliner chair in the morning before school, like, watching YouTube videos or whatever. And my husband would literally put toothpaste on the toothbrush and take it to him in the living room so he could lay in the recliner and watch the show while he's brushing his teeth. And I'm like, no, absolutely not, because that's teaching them that it's okay to be lazy. Absolutely not. Get up and go in the bathroom, because you're not going to make a toothpaste mess all over the chair or the carpet or whatever that somebody else has to clean up. And so having the same kind of parenting styles, or having those conversations about things that you will accept, that you will not accept, like, are you going to allow them to eat like a bunch of candy before dinner and then they don't want dinner? You know, those are the kind of conversations that sometimes are hard as parents.
So. Yeah.
So it's really hard to be on the same page with everything, but you kind of have to work that out. And it may be easy, it may not be easy. It just all depends.
Well, it's probably going to be harder out in a co-parenting situation that I'm likely going to be in. And
yeah.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
How do you think about navigating the social norms around holidays and the very, to me, I see it as like very commercialized holidays, right?
Right, same. I don't like Christmas.
But yet it's
or Valentine's Day or yeah.
But yet it's something that so many traditions have been built upon, or even mm-hmm. you know, just the example of like families get together for Thanksgiving and families get together for mm-hmm. Christmas, and you know, being you know, I find myself struggling with the thought of like, well, I don't want to indoctrinate them in that, but then at the same time, am I a bad guy because then I'd be taking away that experience as a child when you're a child? Mm-hmm. Because it's also like, well, then I'm lying to the kid saying there is, you know, these, you know, whether it's Santa Claus or whatever it is,
right,
or mm-hmm. the Tooth Fairy or, you know, mm-hmm. whatever, then it's like, okay, well, now I'm lying to my child,
right,
about it.
Right.
Do I just like pretend, you know, turn the other cheek? But then it's like, well, that doesn't seem quite right either. I don't know. That's an area that me and my fiance kind of have a little bit of discussing still to do around it, because it's mm-hmm. like, I've always been very much of a bah humbug kind of
guy. I'm not telling my kids this is Santa Claus.
Yeah,
and Ashley knows that.
I never did either. My daughter always knew that mom was AKA yeah. Santa.
And why not? I mean, why not take the credit for it? But
yeah.
So you've also, Jeremiah, got another issue with, so his fiance's sister just had a kid a few months prior to your kid. And
yeah.
this kid is going to grow up having the world handed to them. Mm-hmm. This is my prediction. I don't know if you disagree with me. We've talked about this.
he's smiling already. So he's like, yeah.
Your kid is going to see this, probably have whatever the fuck he wants. And I know you and Ashley aren't going to raise your kid like that.
But, no.
Yeah. And see, the thing is,
you're going to be the bad guy at some point.
Yeah. With the holidays, it's always important that you make your own traditions. Like I grew up and it was always, we always went to my grandma's house for every single get together, and that's literally all it was. And then, you know, with my ex-husband, it was like always everything at his mom's house, and then the next day it would be like at his grandmother's house or whatever. And so it was so stressful because we were literally always going here or there, and you know, four meals a day or whatever, and then they get mad if you don't eat, if you already ate, whatever. And so it's important to create your own thing and like a tradition, and this is what we do every year. Like we're gonna spend the day, like we're gonna eat lasagna instead of turkey, or we're gonna, you know, jump in the leaves or whatever. And that is like your family tradition and what you do every year. Not that you can't visit relatives, but it doesn't have to be that stressful. It doesn't have to be where you have to do your family and your mom and your grandparents and, you know, your stepdad and this and that and all over the place, because nobody enjoys that. And the kids really don't enjoy that either, because they're literally exhausted from traveling all over the place, just like you are.
Yeah, it's funny because both of your families are here.
Right. So I'm lucky mm-hmm. in that sense. But yet at the same time, mm-hmm. I remember being, my parents divorced when I was in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. And so I do remember that, like, you know, Christmas Eve I'm here and Christmas I'm there. And mm-hmm. and I do remember it being exhausting.
It is exhausting.
And yeah,
so your kids are just as tired as you are, and that's why they will literally fall asleep in the car, because they don't want to go all over the place anywhere either. They want to be someplace that is stable and home, you know, because when you introduce like all these other places, a lot of times they're too small to understand why they're always bouncing here and there and everywhere. where you could have the same thing at your house. And then what you do with your families is like, okay, so instead of spending Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever at your house, come to our house. Or, you know, like if you want that traditional thing, have them come to your house instead of you going somewhere else, because your house is the safe place for your kids, right? Or have your families like, we're not doing, you know, Christmas or Thanksgiving or whatever, but we'll have dinner with you on a Sunday or whatever. You don't have to make it centered around the holidays.
Yeah, I don't do anything on Christmas. I usually hang out alone.
Neither. I hate that so much. Now, I do like Thanksgiving, but the reason why I really like Thanksgiving, number one, I love the food, but it's like a holiday where you don't have to buy anything for people. Yeah, and that's become so like expected in our society. And I hate that. That's why I've never liked Christmas. Like, even as a kid, I did not like Christmas. Because, like, you know, you're 6 years old or 10 years old, and you're worrying about what you're going to get your parents for Christmas. You don't have a job. Well, I got to go find something for Dad. Got to find something for Mom. I'm like, why?
Make them a pretty
card. I'm still that way. We just quit, like, with all the traditions like that, as far as like going to people's houses or sending out Christmas cards or all of that stuff. We don't do any of that. We don't buy for people. We're like, we're adults. We don't need you to buy for us. We're not buying for you. I still get the kids something, but that's because they're still struggling being young adults. You know, but yeah. We'll send them like food boxes, or we'll give them like gas cards or something like that. We don't do like extravagant, expensive gifts and stuff like that. We don't do it. It's stupid.
Yeah, I always get from my stepdad that pretty much raised me. He sends me a check on my birthday and a check on Christmas. And I just turned 40 this year. Still got one. And I remember when I turned 30, I asked him, I said, so, is there a point where you're going to stop giving me money? I appreciate it, but like, I don't need it. I don't expect it. And he said, well, shit, Lloyd, his dad was Lloyd. At the time that he told me this, Lloyd was like in his late 80s. He just died earlier this year. And he was still writing him checks on his birthday and Christmas. I guess it's just something that they always did. But yeah, it feels a little weird.
We'll just, I mean, we do things for the kids, but like I said, it's gift cards for gas or food or, you know, whatever. Or like I'll send like my daughter a care package of like homemade goodies or, you know, whatever. They know not to expect, like, I'm not going to send you a box with like iPads and iPods and all that stuff in it. It's not going to happen. So, you know. Food. They always need food and gas for their cars. So,
yeah.
Or cleaning supplies.
These days, $50 gas card might get you half a tank.
Hey, here it is actually cheap. It is $2.87.
What the hell?
Yeah.
We're like at $4.20 right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a couple months ago creeping to $5 again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Ours has gone down drastically. Like, within the last month, it keeps dropping, and yeah, it was $2.87 today.
Even with chaos in the Middle East, you've got cheap gas prices, huh?
Well, it's funny because, like, even it's funny that gas is still cheaper, like, near Texas and like as you go south, because it's like, well, I know that we're not collecting that much oil from down south there, so it's not like it's cheaper to transport it. So it's just
Who controls your state.
Yeah. Thank God we're not in California, at least, where it's like $8 at times.
It's like the only worser case than Oregon.
Yeah. That's so crazy. I was just talking to somebody the other day about, you know, they got offered a job doing like a, you know, like a mobile counseling service or whatever. And then they called them and they're like, well, but you have to have your own car, which they don't, because they take public transportation because they live in LA and there's nowhere to park. And it's like, you have to have public transport, or you have to have your own car. And then you have to pick up clients and take them places and whatever. And I was like, and are they going to work like extra pay for mileage in there since your gas is like eight something now? Because it was like 8.27 or something a gallon the other day. And I was like, wow. Usually they pay like 35 cents a mile. I'm like, they would really have to up that mileage.
Oh, yeah. Well, we are creeping up on, I don't know, would we be going about an hour and a half? They can't tell us.
I don't know, something like that.
But I, does anybody have any other topics they want to bring up about parenting before we go around the horn to sign off?
Boys?
I mean, as far as like topics go, you?
I don't think so. I think just jump in and...
Yeah, I want to...
Follow your compass.
I'll go first, just signing off on my thoughts on parenting at the moment. It is just to go off some of the stuff you were saying about your hesitations and some of the ones I had when I was younger. I think that is a lot of programming. I mean, mm-hmm. I did have a more liberal mindset. I always sniffed out the bullshit, but I could tell that climate change, overpopulation, I used to be kind of leaning into those things as real problems and all that. But that was never my reason, more than I just thought like the world isn't that great of a place to be. But I'm a joyous person and I actually have a good life, and I mean, no matter what happens to me, I find a way to have fun and get like, I think it's fun to be alive. So I also don't think there has ever been a good time to have a kid, like mm-hmm. a good time, like when right. wasn't there something like on the horizon and the next big war or the next plague or famine? And I think they do program us that way so that we don't.
100%.
And mm-hmm. so I've kind of been, you know, I came to terms with those things probably 4 or 5 years ago and just been open to the possibility of having a kid. But I'm excited about it. And I do have a lot of worries, but I also used to worry about having a girl. It was my biggest fear was fathering a girl in
this
world.
That's a whole nother experience.
And now I've been like kind of being a stepdad to this other girl who's 6 now. And I don't feel like I have a preference of what this kid's going to be. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling it's going to be a boy. I'll say that. It's always leaning that way. I could be wrong, but I don't dread having a girl if that's the case, which I always thought I would. And I do think there is some darkness that, you know, you were just talking about, what was the word you used? Was it struggle?
Oh, suffering.
Yeah, yeah, of course. But I also find people who haven't had to suffer to be extremely insufferable. To go back to that word, like, you don't want to be the ones to cause your kids suffering, but you also don't want them to be in a cushy existence, because then they're going to be cunts.
Right.
Yeah, but you don't. There was something that I was listening to talking about a prison where everybody was imprisoned, and a philanthropist came and he saw that they were sleeping on, like, you know, they weren't sleeping on anything, right? They were sleeping uncomfortably, and it was, and so he donated a bunch of money so that they could all have beds, and he felt like he did his thing. He felt good about himself that he provided a little more comfort for their suffering. Mm-hmm. And then another philanthropist came and saw that they were bathing in disgusting water and they didn't have clean water, so he donated enough money to have clean water so they could have a little more comfort in their suffering. And then finally a philanthropist came and he saw that they were in prison, in this comfort prison where it was all comfortable. And he released them all because he had
it's better in here.
right.
And he released them from the hell of comfort that they were in, because, you know, it's like, if you're so comfortable in your own prison, then why would you get out?
Never,
and why would you
leave.
Try to be better? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, I think that there is something to having a little bit of discomfort, but then also, you know, you can suffer you know, you suffer when you work out and you feel better. You suffer when you mm-hmm. make some food in the kitchen and then you make a good meal out of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry to steal your thunder.
No. Really good input. I just had a couple more things to say, but I don't want to act like I know what the fuck parenting is, having never done it. And even doing the step parent thing, nothing even close, you know, it's like I get to shine. But I think I'm going to want my kid to like suffer a little bit and not have that padded existence.
Mm-hmm. Some David Goggins right. suffering.
Well, yeah. And like, I don't know. I think that teaching your kids how to exercise and be disciplined physically and all that's mm-hmm. important. But just even like letting them get the shit kicked out of them by the world a little bit. Mm-hmm. Even though I do claim isolation is healthy, there's a fine balance, but I'm going to do my best and I don't know what's going to happen. But no, you go next because you have a 3-month-old and you're a little bit ahead of me, and then we'll let Janet finish.
Well, I can say that I definitely didn't feel like I was ready. I mean, as ready as I could be. You know, the first diaper change was really hard, but now that I'm on diaper change like 3,000 already,
you're a pro.
Feeling pretty good about it.
Had you done that before your own kid?
Like maybe once or twice when my nieces were born way back in the early 2000s, the early aughts. But I was like 8 years old at the time. So, so, you know, to maybe ease your mind a little bit, I felt like something happened when I saw my son in front of me, mm-hmm. where it's like, there is this thing that just like clicked inside of me. That's just like, okay, I just need to take care of you now.
Now
like,
you're the protector.
Yeah. And,
do you know when that was?
That night,
because you were saying that mm-hmm. you just stared all night long. Was Ashley asleep?
She was passed out. Yeah. I think she took a sleep aid because she was so jacked up on all the hormones. Mm-hmm. And she needed to sleep because she hadn't slept for 3 days and she just had a C-section. And yeah. And so, yeah, I just like stared at him and then like slept with him on my chest. And, you know, seeing that innocence and realizing that you need to protect them and also mm-hmm. then provide for them. And, you know, and now seeing him smile, it's like, this is like the most joyous thing ever.
Well, it doesn't hurt that he fucking looks exactly like you.
I know, right? It's like, do you like me because I look like you, or
that's biology. That happens yeah. for a reason.
Well, not only on my end, but on his end. Like, as soon as I come into the room, he smiles and like, you know, like
Ashley walks in and he's like,
Ashley does get very upset. She does get upset with you know, it seems that he's got a favorite already, but I'm sure that we'll.
It's just like animals. Animals. I was going to say their dog. Thing.
Mm-hmm. Likes him better too.
Yeah, it's the thing because like in our house, I'm the only female in the household now. Our animals are boys and my husband, and the animals like will follow me everywhere, whether I'm in the shower, they're standing on the side of the tub like looking in the shower, or going to the toilet with me, or going to the kitchen with me, or whatever. But him, like, they ignore him all the time and they run from him. Like, he's very scary anytime he moves or breathes or whatever. But yeah, babies are the same way. They pick their favorites. And I will say parents also pick their favorites when they have multiple children.
I agree. And then none of them really can admit it either because it makes them feel like assholes.
Yeah.
Well, I think, though, you know, to kind of close off my end, it's like, I think do the best you can and mm-hmm. it'll all work out. And I think, if anything, not only are we teaching the children, but the children are teaching us. Mm-hmm. They're going to be the greatest mirror of, like, you know, I thought about it today of, like, man, I'm really going to have to practice mindfulness and like stoicism in a way of like, I can't let my emotions get the head of me anymore, or like, you know, I have to really try to control that so that when something pisses me off, I don't mm-hmm. lash out. And then, and not only that, but like, I have to make sure that I don't redirect my energy, which is such a common thing to do, where it's like, oh, me and my fiance are having an argument, I'm going to carry that with me and then let it out on the next person.
Mm-hmm.
Zig Ziglar has a saying of like, this guy who was, had told the team, he was the manager, and he had told the team, like, you know, we need to be all be on time, and we need to be, you know, showing up. And he was at a meeting, and the meeting ran long, and then he was trying to drive back to work, and he was speeding, and then the cop pulled him over and wrote him a ticket, and he's all pissed off. He's like, this fucking cop. Then he goes, and he then gets late to work, back to work, and he then yells at all the people that he works underneath him, and then, you know, like, you should have had that paper to me by noon. Why the hell isn't this done yet? Then that person then goes to their secretary and says, you know, why the hell isn't this thing done yet? And mm-hmm. the secretary goes home and they open the door and the cat's in the way and they kick the cat. And this, it's like, wouldn't it have been more efficient for the first guy to go and kick the cat than to have all these other things happen?
It's a ripple effect.
Yeah. And it's, I think having my son now thinking about, you know, like, I need to take care of my thoughts and processes
right
inside myself first and not let it boil over.
It's good that you realize that now, because a lot of people don't think about that and harness that. And so they still carry on with the way that their personality is and has been. And so they're still going to fight with their spouse or what significant other, or, you know, they're going to carry over that angriness from work into their household. That's going to affect the kid regardless. Yeah. Even like I said before the show, even if you're not verbally fighting or arguing in front of your children, they can still pick up the tension. And so being very mindful about that is a very smart thing to do. So kudos to you.
Yep. I try.
And I just want to say, do not be carried away with being a helicopter parent, because that will push your kids away faster than anything. Do not be afraid to let them fail and make mistakes. Especially when they get into the teenage years, they're going to have to learn some hard lessons. And unfortunately, a lot of the times they're going to have to learn them on their own. They have to go through those to be able to grow. And so even though as a parent, you want to protect them and you don't want them to make mistakes, when you're constantly going, well, don't do that, don't whatever, because, you know, that's stupid. You shouldn't say this, or you shouldn't date this boy or whatever. The more you say don't or no, the more they're going to do it. And so sometimes they have to make a mistake and fall down to learn on their own and to shape their behavior without your interference. And I know that's really hard to do as a parent, but it's really necessary, because if you're constantly their savior, they're never going to grow and mature into who they're supposed to be. So that's my two cents.
Yeah. That's a great way to close it out.
Janet, thank you as always. You're one of my favorite people. Janet actually is the first person
one of my favorite
to give
too.
My baby a present. So my baby would be warm and snug, thanks to you.
And that's why I was going to ask you, because literally every time I go anywhere, I'm always looking at baby stuff. And I'm like, but I don't know if it's a boy or a girl. And so now I know that we don't know yet.
They're all babies in Southern Oregon.
But you're going to get more stuff. Yeah, well, I didn't want to do the whole like rainbow pride flag theme, you know, so I kind of wanted to like pick a neutral, but that's really hard to find neutral stuff right
yeah
now.
I don't know, we'll find out soon enough. We're but I love you and thank you for coming on.
I love you
on.
Too
and
it's
we'll
so
say
nice to meet you.
We'll likewise, say a proper goodbye likewise after we sign off. But Jeremiah, thanks for sitting in. I think after I come back from my maternity leave, maybe we should get some more deep dive episodes going.
I 100% agree. All right. And we got lots of stuff we need to cover.
He said it publicly.
Hey, I heard it.
The wrong girl. It's that's my coke dealer. Just kidding, me on Janet. But yeah, we'll say goodbye after we hang up. But all right, everybody, this is probably the last one for a while. We'll be dropping some bonus stuff, but we love you and stay safe out there. No, I will stop recording. Thank you.
Yeah, stay alert, stay alive. You know, keep your head on a swivel out there, eh?
And Deplorable Nation for Janet's podcast. Do you want to add anything to that? I'll put the link in the show notes.
Nope. Just go follow the show and like, comment, subscribe, share, download, whatever you need to do, because I'm kind of cool.
She's got a lot of great episodes.
Pretty nice.
Just skip the one that I'm on, and you'll
no, be don't
good.
Do that.
You'll be safe. But there's a lot of other really good guests. Good night, everybody. Peace.